I'm Mark Bayshore. Those of us who work in radio have a natural interest in our voices, but lots of people rely on their voices to make a living. A researcher at Michigan State University is looking into the factors that can damage our voices and how to avoid them. Current State Scott Pohl talked with Eric Hunter, an associate professor of communicative sciences and disorders at MSU, about how important the voice is to millions of Americans.
When I think of people who use their voices in their living, I, of course, think of radio announcers, but there's also singers, and yet there's a lot more to it than that. When we've talked briefly before this interview, occupations that I hadn't really considered came up, and primarily among those was teachers. And, of course, it's a natural fit. They talk all day long. They probably have to raise their voices at least some of the time. A lot of the subjects you work with have been teachers.
Yeah, people that use their voice in an occupational setting make up about, that's a primary tool of the trade, they're using their voice, is about 25% of the occupational population. Teachers are about three times more likely to be seen in a voice clinic than other people that use their voice as an occupational tool of the trade.
Well, you know, the obvious thing to think about is the amount of time they talk and the volume at which they maybe need to talk. I've seen teachers in some classrooms who wear a microphone and their voices are amplified for their students. What sorts of problems seem to crop up most often with teachers?
Well, they usually start affecting how they use their voice in their classroom. And it usually starts because they can't get the attention of the class anymore. And so they'll have some complaints that they can't have the range of their voice use. They can't be as dynamic as they often are. So those are where the complaints usually start. If they're seen by someone, or if they're not seen by something, then it can grow into something that can be long-term.
Is it something that gets worse over the course of time? I suspect young teachers maybe have an easier time with this than teachers who've been around a long time, that older teachers perhaps experience more problems.
You have two components of that. One is, as the voice ages, it doesn't recover as well. And there are a lot of techniques people try to do to help offset aging, which many of them do help. But you also have an experience factor. Some of the young teachers are not very experienced on how well their voice feels and how they need to pace themselves throughout a day and even at the beginning of a school year.
Are there techniques that can help with that?
There are. The techniques that can help with vocal health generally, especially with teachers, can be thought of in two categories. One of them would bring up is called vocal hygiene. So how to just take care of your voice generally, making sure you're healthy, drinking enough water, staying away from irritants, watching, common things like cutting down on smoking, too much caffeine and hot drinks. Now, the other aspect is actually what you do, such as a vocal athlete, any athlete would want to do warm-ups, watching how they use their voice during the day, as any athlete would, and then cool downs at the end.
Not unlike what we see singers do sometimes, warming up before a performance.
Yes, singers, they have to live with it every day, where most of the rest of us that aren't performers of voice, that aren't using it professionally, don't think about it. And so all of a sudden you take someone that's a teacher that isn't a performer, you're thrown into this environment they're using all the time in a performance aspect. They just, they may be able to get by for a while, but it's just a matter of time.
Are there techniques we can learn from, say, actors who have to learn how to project their voices?
Yes. In some education departments around the country, they do have at least a day of how to use your voice in a room, project well. There are also other techniques on what a good warm-up is. Many of them that have problems end up, after getting medical issues resolved, will end up working with a singer or an actor to build their voice, a voice actor.
Now, you brought up the subject of aging earlier, and I think all of us have a handle on the fact that our voices change as we age. Can you explain why that is? Why would my voice sound any different than it did on tapes I made 20 years ago?
The vocal system is made up of a lot of muscles and also has some cartilages that have a joint just as your knee would or your shoulder would. And so anything that will affect other parts of those body that have muscles and joints will also affect the voice. So the cartilages, because it's around cartilage, starts to get hard and isn't as pliable. The joint doesn't move as much. And then the muscles begin to, they call it atrophy, they become less massive, they aren't as weak, and that will change the breathy quality of a voice. So you hear somebody that's elderly, they'll have a breathiness to their voice. They also won't have the range of pitches they used to because they don't have the same movement because of these cartilages.
One thinks of needing rest to get your voice back when you've had an issue, but beyond rest, what other treatments sometimes do people need? Are there medications that help? Surgery sometimes perhaps called for?
It depends on what's wrong. From what most of us will run into on day-to-day life, and even many performers of voice, broadcasters or anything, rest does a lot of good. And it usually takes about two to three days to start getting voice back unless there's been a lot of damage. And then sometimes it's a couple weeks. People that don't depend on their voice, if they have a problem that's persisting more than about 2 weeks, it's time to be seen by a specialist. If you're dependent on it in a performance mode, we usually say if it's longer than a week, you know, it's go get seen. Make sure there's, we say, make sure there's no lumps and bumps. They go in there and they take a peek at them. They make sure there's something that's not abnormal, that isn't just the normal course of recovery.
One of the things I know that you've examined is gender-specific voice accommodation strategies for teachers and people maybe who work in call centers, people who are talking all day long. So talk about how you might approach this issue for male patients as opposed to maybe a different strategy with female patients.
Well, for whatever reason, and we're still investigating it, women just have a higher instance of voice issues. That is more than just occupational hazard or requirements. And because of that, and also the systems, even though they're different. The women use a different range in their voice, and the men do. You can see that in singers and acting performers. So a good clinical voice pathologist will treat the two differently. There are many of the techniques that are similar, but a man might be required to do different kind of warm-up techniques. They also will be given different kind of time course intervention. But women also are a little bit more attuned to changes because of the range they use.
Since you do so much work with teachers, I wonder if that's a factor here, just that more teachers are women. Is that maybe part of this equation?
It is. About in the United States, 80% of grade school teachers are women. So you have teachers which are inherently using their voice a lot, which puts them at a higher risk of an issue. Then you have women that are about twice as likely to have issues over men. And so you have an population of people and a population of individuals who are we consider them a high risk for voice problems.
One thing I've learned over the years is to not abuse my voice, and things I have done in the past that I don't do anymore. Like, for instance, if I go to a Saturday football game, I'll cheer and so on, but I'm conscious of not yelling too loud. I've had Monday mornings in the past where my voice was still suffering from the football game on Saturday. Talk about short bursts of abusing your voice and the problems that can cause.
Well, a short burst all by itself probably won't do a lot, but it's that prolonged one, like in a football game where you go to the soccer game on Saturday morning of a nephew or a niece or a sibling or a son or a daughter. You go to those things and you produce a loud voice for more than just calling across the street to a friend or a neighbor. That will add up very quickly and do damage. And the damage that's done is similar to clapping your hands. If you clapped your hands a couple of times at a concert is one thing, but if you go to a sporting event, you clap the whole time, your hand starts, you start feeling it. You're doing some damage there, damage your body will recover from, but it's still damage.
Are there times where the sound of someone's voice is an indicator of a physical problem that otherwise you might not know about? I ask because of the approach I see in some TV commercials for dentists, that when you see your dentist might see something while examining your mouth and your teeth and gums that indicates another problem that you need to see a doctor about. Does that ever happen with people when you hear their voice? Is there something that you can hear sometimes that indicates another problem?
Their voice, the creation of voice right at the neck area is right at the lifeline of everything that happens in our bodies. Everything kind of constricts and goes through there. So it's very susceptible to issues that we have in other places. It's susceptible to whether we're having breathing issues, neurological issues. And so an early indication of Parkinson's disease, if people were aware of it, is a weakening voice. And they may not notice in other ways because that's where it hits. So there are ways. In fact, in the old days, doctors, before they could do all the diagnostics they do, they'd talk to somebody, they'd listen to their voice, they'd smell their breath. There are things they could indicate, yeah, there's something going on here that's more than meets the eye.
When do you think, as a patient, I should consider seeking help if I think I'm having a problem with my voice for a few days or something like that? When is it time to go see a doctor?
Well, we all get that way, whether it's from yelling at a game or because we get sick and we lose our voice from a little bit. But if it persists after the original reason happened, and our general rule of thumb that we kick around in the vocal health community is about 2 weeks. If you're just a regular person that's not dependent on your voice and you have these hoarse symptoms and your voice is really having a hard time but not getting better after 2 weeks, it's time to be seen.
Eric Hunter is an associate professor in the Department of Communicative Sciences and Disorders at Michigan State University. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For Current State, this is Scott Pohl.